government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth. When we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence Footprints, Don Nikoloff.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this January the 13th on the West Coast, now January the 14th on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. We'd like to also welcome those listening in on Wind Talkers Radio Network or on blogtalkradio.com on the Internet. And we are excited to have you guys as partners with BBS Radio during these broadcasts. Lots of news going on today, and the media now is beating the drum of the disaster in Haiti. We raised the issue on this show last night with my special guest, Drew Malone Raines III, and I raised the issue of a possible artificial earthquake, and surprisingly, or maybe not surprisingly, International Currency Review editor and publisher Christopher Story also alluded to the fact that there is a major truncation of banking lines that run through Haiti, and that in an effort to discourage the payouts that are being orchestrated internationally in Washington, D.C., New York, and other banks around the world, not to mention all the arrests and the horizontalizations that are occurring to certain bankers and people that don't want to comply with releasing the proper codes and all of that, it's no surprise. Got to hear former President Bill Clinton ask people to send in cash, even if it's a dollar, he said. I'm sure that dollar will go very far, especially if they get their hands on it like they did with the Hurricane Katrina funds. That's my comment on the news for this evening. I'd like to bring tonight's guest on board. He has a great website you're probably familiar with. If you're not, you need to go to educate-yourself.org and read up on just about any topic you can think of, whether it's related to politics, government corruption, advanced technologies, suppressed technologies, healing modalities, advanced science, and the like. He's also a good friend of mine. He's a researcher himself and a prolific writer, and his name is Ken Adachi. Ken, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Don. Pleasure to be on with you again.
I don't know if you've been following the news, but you got to hear my little rant at the beginning of the show.
And yes.
These guys just appear out of the woodwork, don't they, when it has to do with pumping the propaganda.
Right. Yes, of course, I didn't know what you were going to say before the show, and I didn't discuss anything about this matter with you prior to coming on, but synchronicity is at work once again. I thought I was going to surprise you with something, but
I surprised you. Huh?
Synchronicity is at work. So I'll just take 5 minutes on this, and then I want to launch into healing modalities, which I didn't get to at the last talk, and I want to get this subject covered, because we can spend the whole show on this topic alone. But I'll just put 5 minutes on it. Didn't know what you were going to say, and I received some important information today about the nature of the earthquake in Haiti. A source who I have complete trust in and reliability, and at this point I'm not going to name the source until this person okays it, so I'll just say it's a source that I've acquired a great deal of important information from in the past. I trust the source as being usually right on the money, and I was told that the Haiti earthquake was not a natural event at all. In fact, it was triggered by a nuclear device, and the party also said recently there was a earthquake in Northern California. I'm trying to remember the date, 1 to 2 weeks ago or so. It was up in the general San Francisco area, somewhere up there. I remember hearing about it on the news.
Mm-hmm.
That event was also triggered by a nuclear device. Government, working through the military for the most part, has been engaging in a lot of detonation of nuclear devices for various reasons. Now,
Earth moving, we could.
Yeah, ZSL on my website, ZS Livingstone in the past, has put up essays in which he's recorded or picked up and psychically, and then had been able to verify with seismogram readouts that there was a number of quakes in the Arctic region, for instance, which normally doesn't get earthquakes, and as well as in the Pacific Ocean, that normally these sites that he was picking up on normally don't have quake activity, that were all being created artificially with nuclear devices. I told you privately on the phone that I got information from yet another source that I trust, that the Navy has been involved in operations that not only involve nuclear devices in the Pacific, but also a very bizarre and strange operation in which they're attempting to, they were attempting to install what seemed to be very, very long, either metal tubing or some sort of shaft into strategic locations in the floor of the ocean with the purpose of actually destroying sea life in the surrounding area of this very long shafted device that they were attempting to install. Interference has been created to mitigate that operation, which is really intended to kill off sea life, perhaps in anticipation of future calamities so as to limit the food supply. So anyway, the event in Haiti, as well as the one in Northern California, the source picked up, was in fact triggered by nuclear devices. You know, while Joe Viles of Australia, when he was still alive, was very good at finding out information about covert government operations, such as the Bali explosion, such as the Boxer Day tsunami that killed so many people in Indonesia and so forth, of December 26th, I think it was, 2004. I believe that was the day.
Yeah, there was a day after that sacrifice that I had discovered.
Right, right. That Joe Viles had a lot of hard evidence that indicated that was a nuclear device placed in the Pacific to trigger the earthquake that led to the tsunami action. So, if you recall, Haiti just recently suffered a number of very damaging hurricanes, and
mm-hmm.
we know that the government has the technology to create, direct, and steer hurricanes. Katrina, for instance, was a artificially jacked up hurricane steered right into New Orleans to create a little practice run for our Blackwater friends and our FEMA pals. Haiti now, the source who told me about the nuclear device that triggered the earthquake, of course, you got to remember, this earthquake occurred in an area that hasn't experienced earthquakes in Haiti for 200 years. It was very shallow, 6 miles below the surface, so as to maximize damage, of course, and death. I don't know if it's accurate, but I heard on NPR today that estimates of death are between 100,000 to 500,000. Now, that may be grossly exaggerated. Typically, they are over mainstream, but they're tossing around those numbers. I don't know what the actual event is, but it was a devastating quake. So this party indicated it had to do with the banksters were rather irritated with a great deal of voodoo, kind of psychic activity emanating from Haiti against those Illuminati interests that love to control our lives in myriad ways, and banking and all that. And apparently the enough Haitians were involved in, let's say, voodoo activity to put a crimp in the style of these banksters, that this was kind of a retaliatory type event, in that those who are of this persuasion are perfectly aware that the earthquake was not a natural event, and that it was a sort of a payback event. I might remind you that when I went up to Los Angeles in 2000 to hear a two-hour talk by Stuart Swerdlow, he alluded to the 1995 Kobe earthquake, which occurred on January 17th, and he said that was not a natural event, that was triggered by nuclear devices that were placed in the harbor of Kobe to cause the earthquake. And the purpose behind that was, it was a tit-for-tat payback for the Northridge earthquake, which occurred on January 17th of, the Kobe earthquake occurred on January 17, 1995. The Northridge earthquake occurred on January 17, 1994. And that was, according to Stuart Swerdlow, triggered by artificial Tesla technology by the Japanese faction of the Illuminati against essentially the Bush people, who they apparently don't like at all. And that the Kobe earthquake, 1 year later to the day, was a send-back tit-for-tat message by the American Illuminati, presumably with Bush's blessings and desires behind it, exactly 1 year later. If you can remember, when Bush Sr. was the president, he had gone to Japan and got quite ill at a state dinner, and the reality was is that there was an attempted poisoning there of Bush Sr., and Bush Sr., being very high player in the Illuminati, didn't like that at all. So there was a lot of animosity that existed between the two groups. So those two events, those two so-called earthquakes, were both artificially created by two factions of the Illuminati playing tit-for-tat. And
Just for a reason, okay. Mm-hmm. This is what Chris Story wrote. This is just a couple of short little paragraphs here.
Okay.
He says, at 10:52 p.m. on Tuesday, the 12th of January, 2010, it was reported to us that the consequences of noncompliance with the completion and closure of the settlement's payments by the end of this week may be dramatic. We have been advised what the consequences may be, but we choose at this juncture to refrain from revealing what we have been told. It's too sensitive. At 1:05 a.m. UK time on Wednesday, the 13th of January, 2010, it was reported to us that at 6:37 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, the NBC Brian Williams show had reported an earthquake measuring 7.0 on the Richter scale at Port-au-Prince, Haiti. By the way, that's the French pronunciation for those that want me to say Prince. This location serves as a main junction box to undersea transmission cables from the United States, mainly to Latin America and African destinations, although some cables go through Port-au-Prince to Europe, we understand. This was an operation put together under criminal President Clinton after CIA instigated instability had resulted in the departure of the Haitian ruler du jour, that's also French, Chris wrote that, enabling peacemaker Jimmy Carter to be parachuted in to patch things up, under cover of which operation the transmission cables and junction box system was installed for Latin American money transfers. It has long been reported to us, and we have publicized this information in our journal, the Latin American Times, that Haiti is a key staging point for drug shipments and represents an operation handled by none other than, I'm adding this now, I'm improvising on the name, the inventor of the Internet and the inventor of global warming, Al Gore. So I thought you might find that interesting that that our take on it was independently arrived at the same conclusion by Chris Gorey.
Right. So there you got it. You got it. Three sources saying essentially the same thing. It was an artificial event.
Now he's got more information, but you know, I encourage anybody that wants to read that, they can go to worldreports.org and just click on the top link on his homepage. Mm-hmm. It's an article called Stinking CIA Cauldron Explodes in Their Faces.
Yes. Yeah. I'll just conclude with this thought, and then we'll get into the health-related. I mean, this is fascinating, but I keep on postponing this information from show to show, so
I know
I won't be tempted to continue along this line, but it is very interesting. I just want to emphasize the notion that the consciousness of the planet is rising, and as a result, more and more people are becoming more aware of the truth of things. Every event that occurs in time and space is indelibly etched into what's called the universal mind. At least Jung called it that. And this data bank is accessible if you acquire take the time and patience and acquire certain skills to tap into it. Now, many people are adept at accessing this information, but a certain number of people, because of, let's say, more developed psychic attunement, we might say, including yourself, can become aware of this information as it's happening. Mm-hmm. Very often they sometimes go into a meditative state to, you know, to tune out the extraneous world so they can, and other times people can ask a source to tell them what's going on, and then sometimes it's delivered in during the sleep state at night. Other times people who are, let's say, very adept at dowsing can access information through a dowsing pendulum. Other people get an intuitive hunch, et cetera. I tend to be of the latter group. Somehow when I hear new information, I get an initial impression of the story as presented by the media. It either feels right or it doesn't feel right. In most cases, when I hear something on the media, some news event, most cases it doesn't feel right. It's a distortion or a complete obfuscation or a fabrication of what really happened.
That's been that way for years.
Exactly. So I'm just saying that as hard as they try to keep this information from the people of this planet, it's becoming more and more difficult because you simply can't terminate these avenues of insights or avenues of communication, I should say, into the universal mind. There's some people call it the Akashic record. If it occurred, it's indelibly printed in that data bank. And, you know, people with more advanced psychic abilities can pick it up right away, and others just get vague hunches, but the ranks of people's awareness of these things are growing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost amusing now to see how they just bend over backwards. Bill Clinton, of all people, here you got an Illuminatus, upper rank, let's say. He's certainly not in the same category as George Bush Sr., but he's up there. He's buddy-buddy with George Bush Sr. Here he is put in charge of the UN what's the title they gave to him? Emissary, UN diplomat or something. So the very guy who's undoubtedly fully aware of how the event was truly triggered is the representative of the Illuminati types who created this event to begin with, is going to go there now and act as the ambassador of goodwill. And I heard him on NPR today and talking about all these fine memories he had of Haiti when he was there with Hillary and the palace and, oh, God. I mean, it's so typical of the Illuminati to use their own people, the very ones who plan, pull off. You know, I can only have to remind you of the Bush regime in the wake of 9/11. Mm-hmm. Cheney, Rumsfeld, the very people involved in the planning and the trickery and the obfuscation and the cover-up that occurred on 9/11 and in its immediate wake, they're the ones who tell us the story of what happened. And on NPR, my favorite, you know, Illuminati propaganda outlet, I hear all these ex-Bush people constantly being interviewed, and they're rewriting history as to their role in what can only be described by anyone who's paying attention as treason. And they're explaining it away. So I remember a couple of years ago, Ari Fleischer, who used to be the press spokesman under Bush, you know, getting up there day after day from 9/11 forward, you know, spewing one lie after another, comes out with his book. Well, maybe it's more like a year ago, a year and a half ago, I'm not sure. Comes out with his book and is explaining away all his illicit, unlawful, treasonous conduct as, well, he was either out of the loop or he was deceived or he just didn't know, or their favorite cover story is this massive incompetence on the part of the CIA and they were misled. And it's amazing. They have the NSA, you know, they have, everyone is, it seems, walking around, has implants. They've got all kinds of surveillance monitoring devices. They can tell you when you're, you know, when you pick your nose, you know, getting up in the morning. But my God, the CIA of all people has no idea, you know, what events transpired in the immediate wake of, in the immediate format of 9/11. And then it's just so absurd. They could be telling these tales to children of 10, 11, 12 years old, and children couldn't believe it. It's just so incredibly absurd and moronic.
Mm-hmm.
Tales they constantly, you know, bombard us with. And NPR, you know, I listen to them often through the day. Well, first, it's just hard to find talk radio that can hold my interest. You know, it's AM talk radio is just too primitive.
Yeah.
I listen to KPFK out of Los Angeles, which tends to have more honesty to it, but I get so tired of the leftist drivel, you know, about global warming and so forth. It just drives me up the wall, so I'm forced back to NPR. But God almighty, I wish some enterprising person out there would put up a website dedicated to exposing the daily lies and propaganda you get from National Public Radio. Just today they were
kind of what I do in my research.
Yeah. Today they were, you know, they're Illuminatus of the day explaining away his role, his treasonous role was John Negroponte. This is a dark criminal dude.
Mm-hmm.
And he's explaining away his conduct as if it was all legitimate, as if he was a straight shooter, you know, during his time. He's going on. And again, he's another one who explains the way all these inabilities to recognize 9/11 before it happens as just being due to miscommunication among these intelligence, and when it suits their purpose, they're the most competent, adept, high-tech wizards in the world. When it suits their purpose. When it suits their purpose to obfuscate their involvement in orchestrating these events, they suddenly become the most inept, stupid, keystone cops, you know, bumblers that you can possibly imagine.
Yeah.
Whatever suits their purpose, that's the robe they put on for that day of the news, you know?
Yeah. As a caveat to your remarks and to give you the opportunity to move on to Hulda Clark, if you can finish that.
Mm-hmm.
The first line in my first article on Eisenhower, which I wrote on November 29th of 2009, so just before a month before the new year, I said in the first line, it seems that in 2009, and here we are 2010 now, we do not have to go far in finding the truth. The truth has its own way of finding us. Need I say more?
No, that's perfect, Doug. That's perfect, and that's sort of the capstone I like to put on the notion that, you know, the people who are involved in these activities and their robot agents who, for instance, might monitor this show on their behalf so they can report to some robot supervisor who in turn reports to some robot honcho of some intelligence organization, NSA, whoever. You know, these people, first, they're not people. Second, they're traitors to the interests and goals and desires and aspirations of the American people. They're traitor to humanity as a whole because all their connivances are, their labor is done in the interest of fomenting chaos, of accelerating death, destruction, so that this cabal at the top of these plotters can consolidate ever yet more power into their hands so they can dominate, control, and rule over workers, serfs, slaves that aren't in their cabal loop below them. And the universe as a whole has other plans for these connivers. And I think we're moving towards a day in which, as the consciousness of the masses continues to rise, the transparency of their created earthquakes, their created tsunamis, jacked up hurricanes, this information is becoming known by tens of thousands of people daily. And they're just not going to keep on getting away. Their time is coming to an end. And they are accelerating their end by continuing to engage in this conduct. It's going to lead towards their demise. They don't know it. They just don't know it.
Yeah, they don't see it.
They don't see it. The world, the universe is one. All life is one. In fact, everything in the universe is one. When you engage in activity that is destructive by nature, you are destroying yourself. And they're too stupid to know that. And you're laying the groundwork for their own destruction. And they will see. They will come to see that what will happen in the end is that the meek will inherit the earth, the righteous will triumph in the end, and all their underground bases and their shuttles to Mars and all their plans to escape, let's say, the hard times, which, of course, they intend to create, are going to blow up in their face, just like all their super secret ops. Here we got you, Christopher Story, Canadacci, probably dozens of other people have already got internet stories up, which I haven't even seen yet, saying, you know, this Hades is a artificially created deal. They just can't continue. It's not working anymore, you know? And to which I say, hallelujah, but I would also say to anyone who's in any way involved in any cog of the machinery that's involved in militarism, that's involved in illicit intelligence gathering activities, that's involved in, you know, assassinations, torturing people, harassing people, tormenting people, etc. You know, you dodos out there are digging your graves, and you're too stupid to know it. And you're going to find out one way or the other, whether you like it or not, you're going to find out the reality of what I'm saying is the way the universe works.
And I agree.
So I'll stop with that.
Now I know you want to talk about Hulda Clark's work, and allow me, please, to preface it with something I heard on another talk show earlier this afternoon.
Okay.
It was actually on A. Truat's show, the story behind the story. He had a guest that was a victim, or I should say this lady's daughter was a victim of the Gardasil shot. And she was experiencing all kinds of adverse reactions to this vaccine. And she had gone to 55 doctors before somebody would tell her what was wrong. Now, I was thinking to myself all the while I was listening to her talk, she only needed to go to Dr. Rashid A. Buttar, who we had on the show a little over a month ago, talking about what he did to bring back Desiree Jennings from The Walking Dead. And it never ceases to amaze me the number of quote-unquote qualified doctors that either couldn't tell this young girl what the problem was or didn't know or were unwilling to say what they knew. But she was eventually able to get John Hopkins to admit that it was this illness was created by that vaccine, mm-hmm. which is going to have astounding legal ramifications once we sort out this mess of all these illegal aliens creating laws that we don't have to abide by, merely because they're illegal.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wanted to mention that there are people who are lining up for their shots, their bird flu shots, their swine flu shots. They run a little news item. They ran a news item a night or so ago, and again, people ran out to get the shots.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't need to do that. There are other methods that they can take care of themselves, and they're not being told the truth. That's the whole point I'm making here. So,
well, very good. Since you mentioned about this gal, I might mention I recall, you know, because I posted the Desiree Jennings story as it was unfolding, that she too said she had visited, ready for this, 60 Orthodox physicians to try to find out what was wrong with her. Prior to finally being told by, again, it was a major, maybe it was the Mayo Clinic, I'm trying to recall, but she went through 60 Orthodox allopathic physicians prior to getting a diagnosis of dystonia. That's not rare. That's a common problem which people have to endure, because very often the orthodoxy doesn't know squat about what's going on with the body. I'm sorry if I'm offending anyone out there in the orthodox medical profession, but their training is limited to, let's say, a mechanical view of the body. I've mentioned this before. And that sets up a mindset. That sets up an attitude, that sets up a bias, in which they simply ignore valuable information that could be made available to them and help them achieve a greater understanding of what's going on. They simply dismiss it. One common example is the statements from patients are relegated to the dustbin called anecdotal reports. As if to say it's the equivalent of hearsay in a courtroom setting. In other words, it has no validity, it has no value,
mm-hmm.
because the patient said it. And if Dr. So-and-so from John Hopkins say it, then it, of course, it carries the weight of, you know, of the universe with it. But if Mary so-and-so, who's actually suffering the symptoms and suffering from the undiagnosable problem, says it, it's worthless. It's just a patient anecdote. Mm. That's just one example of the mind-numbing stupidity you get out of medical orthodoxy. That's only part of it. I could rant on about how when they don't understand what's going on, they tell the patient it's all in your head. Boy, I'd like to put my fist through the face of anyone who, you know, had the nerve to say that to me. When I'm paying this yo-yo money to diagnose what's going on, and the best I can get out of them is some Latinized version of, oh, you're nuts, lady. Like, oh, that's an idiopathic symptom. That's, many patients have been told that. They don't know what the word idiopathic means. So that sort of hubris and arrogance and blindness on the side of the orthodoxy started to irritate me as a young man. And as I looked more into the, let's say, errors of orthodoxy, I began to see that the orthodoxy are the last people you want to go to.
Mm-hmm.
To address most common disease conditions, because they simply aren't, haven't spent the time finding out about the energy systems that affect us. How long did it take them to wake up to the validity of acupuncture, for instance? 40, 50, 60, 70 years?
Mm-hmm.
It seems to me it's somewhere in maybe the mid-80s that they start to recognize that there is a legitimate function and purpose of people who apply acupuncture.
Well, acupuncture doesn't sell drugs.
Exactly, right. All of these, what they call alternative medicine, it's really traditional medicine in most cases, what they call alternative medicine, it doesn't have, you know, drugs at as part of the therapy, of course. So everything in that area is swept aside. How long did they call chiropractic manipulation? It's just simply a manipulation of the vertebrae of the spine. Give me a break. It, you know, relieves pressure against nerves and allows energy to flow more correctly. It unblocks, blocked energy pathways, and the person feels better. How long did orthodox, the AMA particularly, the American Medical Association, dump on chiropractics as quacks? They, until they won that, I mentioned in another talk, the Chiropractic Association won a powerful lawsuit against the AMA, and they won a $15 million settlement. I can't remember the amount, but against the AMA, because they had a concerted, organized effort to debunk chiropractic work as being quackery and so forth and so on. It took a lawsuit to finally stop that harassment by the AMA and to get them off their backs and allow these guys to, you know, put ads and in telephone books and start getting some patients and, you know, being able, but it in every case, it's been a fight. Homeopathy, was recognized, you know, this is something that was started in the late 1700s by a German named Samuel Hahnemann. And he recognized that certain plants, if you were to ingest a plant, let's say you're in normal health, if you ingest the plants or applied the a poultice of the plant to your skin in some cases, or make a tincture of the plant and ingest it, you would produce certain symptoms that would, let's just come up with, let's say it matches the symptoms of a cold, just to give us a basic. He found that if a person actually had a cold, if he used a tincture of this plant, for instance, for some reason, and the reason is, never been fully understood, even to this day, it would seem to negate and clear up the symptoms of the cold, so you would recover from the cold faster. And they have, and he, so he started to categorize a number of plants that would, in a healthy person, would produce, let's say, symptoms. Let's say it's you're having a problem with your liver, and a certain plant, a tincture of it, would produce, let's say, pain in your gallbladder, just to come up with an idea. Well, if you had a gallbladder attack and you took a tincture of this plant, it would tend to mitigate the problem and the person would recover. So Hahnemann found, this is really strange to people who only think in logical, linear, mechanistic models, which is what all universities teach and have been for the last 100 years or so, is that as you make a dilution of this original plant, you keep on diluting it to such an extent that you no longer have, you know, a physical particle in the solution. The solution might be water, it might be alcohol, but you essentially, all you have left is a residue of the frequency of that plant in the alcohol, in the water, or it could be, let's say, placed into a sugar cube or a little, so that the frequency of the plant could be captured by water, for instance, or an alcohol tincture. So that he found the more you diluted it, the more powerful the effect. Now, when we're thinking linearly, when we're thinking in mechanical terms, the way we're taught in school, that seems like an oxymoron. We're presuming, well, to make it stronger, you've got to take a larger quantity of the substance in more, in not only a larger quantity, but in a higher concentration. That's the, when we're thinking linearly. But when we're talking about energy medicine, which is what homeopathy really is, everything seems to work in an opposite way from the conventional mechanical model. And this is one example of it. The more you dilute a homeopathic compound, let's say, the more powerful it becomes. So when you go into a health store and you want to get a homeopathic compound, they have a rating, whatever the name of the compound is, there's a number and usually the letter X after it. So it might say, let me think of something, there's a bunch of names for this. Let me.
Are you speaking about a standardized?
Yeah, they can standardize it. Let me just come up with the real name of one homeopathic. Let me call it Mercurius Vivus. That's the name of a homeopathic compound. You could find it in any store that sells them. It's fairly common, and you'll see a number and the letter X. You might see 6X. You might see 12X, you might see 30X. And as the number goes up, it means that the potency is higher. Okay, it's stronger, it has a stronger effect. And the way that it's achieved is by diluting the original compound formula to a greater extent. That's how the numbers go up. When a homeopathic person who is putting together a compound, what they do is they're literally diluting something with either water, alcohol, depending on what the substance is that they're diluting. And when it gets to a point of dilution when there's no more atoms of the substance in there, they could even keep on diluting it. And every time they do that, they create a vibration in the vessel that is holding this substance. It's usually a liquid. It's called succussion, and it's typically done by striking the side of it, you know, to create kind of a vibration. And they often strike it multiple times. And this energy from the striking tends to transfer, let's say, the energy from the original mother solution more vigorously to the water or the alcohol, whatever you're using, to create the dilutions. And so they do this succession with each stage of it. And as I mentioned, they mark it as they proceed with the dilutions. They'll put the number. If they diluted it 6 times, then it's 6x. That means it's gone through 6 stages of dilution. If it's 200x, it means it's gone through 200 dilutions. 200x is far more powerful and profound an effect on the body than, let's say, 6x. It's not always desirable in homeopathy to go for the most powerful because the body is often overwhelmed, and you won't achieve the therapeutic result desired by, you can't, you know, if you have a condition that requires a gentle therapy, you don't want to use a sledgehammer, okay? But some cases, some conditions require a very heavy approach because the situation is so dire or it's so acute that you need a heavy hit to reverse, you know, what could be, you know, life-threatening conditions. So
now, does the average doctor know that? I've never heard.
No, that's the whole point. I just use homeopathy as an example of the ignorance and the blindness that orthodox medical profession has about all of these other valuable, worthy outlets of medicine, of healing modalities that they simply ignore, or more commonly scoff at, or deride, or mock, or ridicule as all snake oil quackery. And, you know, I'm so fed up and sick of it. You know, if you're that dumb, if you're a member of Orthodox medicine and you don't know about these modalities, don't display your ignorance by mocking and ridiculing sciences which you know nothing about, because they truly are profoundly ignorant of these topics. And the few that do wake up and start using them, in a number of cases, most cases, they tend to abandon orthodox methodologies, which mostly, most of them are allopathic physicians, they stop using that prescription pad if they're genuinely interested in curing people and helping people. They will come to realize that prescriptions do far more harm than good for chronic conditions. Now, for acute conditions, there is a place for some pharmacology. I'm just not, you know, a rabid anti-pharmaceutical type zealot. I don't think of myself as that way. But for the most part, pharmaceuticals are damaging to the body. And if you're using a pharmaceutical for long-term management of a chronic health condition, it's not the way to go. It's the worst way to manage it. Because you're just putting a lid on the symptoms, you're not solving or curing the problem. And Huldah Clark, in her books, never recommends pharmaceuticals as a way to address disease condition, because she learned long ago what I just said. They're damaging to the body. They damage the immune system. They accumulate in the body. The body, in many instances, cannot break down, which we call metabolism, cannot metabolize the residues that are created when you ingest one of their magic pharmaceutical pills. So these substances cannot be excreted with the normal avenues. They can't come out the urine, they can't come out the feces, they can't come out of your sweat, they can't come out of the vapor from your lungs. So what happens? They get sequestered in your body.
Yeah.
And as the years roll by, you're building up these little mini toxic dump sites all over your body, in often fatty tissue, but in nerve tissue, in joints, in synovial fluid. So you're getting all these bursitis and and symptoms of what we call arthritis, and, oh, I guess I'm just old. Uh-uh. You've been spending a lifetime ingesting garbage, and these little toxic waste dumps are building up in size all over your body. And if you get enough toxic waste dumps and you're doing everything you possibly can to, you know, minimize your body's defense capabilities, if you're, you know, smoking and drinking booze and trying to just, you know, create free radicals like, you know, it's going out of style, then eventually the body gets weakened, an organ gets weakened where toxic stuff is accumulating, and you may get a tumor growing there, and then it becomes malignant, and then, oh, you God, you run to the orthodoxy, oh, my God, you got cancer, let's start the chemo tomorrow!
Mm-hmm.
And a week from now, we'll set you up for your radiation treatment. Yeah, poison the body more. That's really going to help you a lot. So I've used this, you know, last 20 minutes to rant about the idea that turning to orthodox medicine as a way to take care of yourself is the dumbest thing you can do. And the reason I'm talking about the work of Huldah Clark is that she shows you in her books how to learn how the body works, how to understand how disease conditions engender in the body. And once you understand it, you can reverse the process. And by using nature-based therapies, not pharmaceutical-based therapies, not ionizing radiation-based therapy, not going under, you know, the surgeon's knife therapy, using nature-based therapies that are relatively benign, relatively undamaging to the body's immune system, etc., you can often get out of disease. And if you learn enough and teach your kids enough, you don't have to come down with disease.
You know, Ken, I've been listening to a few shows that Dr. Wayne Pickering's been doing. He's done a weekly series with Tuat and also Drew Raines. And he talks a lot about the mindset and the faux pas of American cuisine, where someone eats a steak and they have a baked potato with it. And he's basically saying, if you're eating steak, he's not saying don't eat meat, but if you're the sort that's inclined to eat meat, eat greens with the meat.
Right.
There are all these interferences. I know people that eat rice and potatoes at the same in the same meal.
Right.
And you want to talk about starch, and then they follow it up with a big dessert, a sugary dessert.
Right.
And so the body goes into I guess it's a toxic shock of sorts where
yeah, you're stressing your digestive organs as a result of mixing the wrong types of food, so that you're sending double signals to the, mm-hmm. For instance, if you're gonna drink milk, which I don't outright condemn, but cow's milk has a lot of problems with it. You're a little safer if you could get raw goat milk, which is getting harder to get because the government doesn't want you having any raw anything. However, if you're going to drink milk, it has a digestive process of curdling. Well, you don't want to mix that milk with other foods that require other type of gastric juices or enzymes to digest properly, because you're sending two or three mixed signals to the stomach at the same time. And you're, so, you know, it'll move out of your stomach in time, but, you know, expect a lot of gurgling and digestive problems once it hits the intestine. You know, you're going to be belching, you're going to be passing wind and so forth, because your food you didn't give it a chance to properly digest. If you properly digest food, you wouldn't burp much after eating, maybe slightly, but people who are belching a lot, why you're belching? Because you're producing, bacteria is producing gas in your stomach, and it's got to go somewhere, so it comes up through your esophagus and not sure. Why is it producing gas? Because the food is not completely broken down and digested.
Yeah.
And if it's in the upper part of the intestine, the gas will go through your stomach and it'll come out as a belch. If it's in the lower part of your intestinal tract, it'll go out the other end. But if you're, and a lot of people don't know this. I didn't know this when I was younger, so that's why I'm kind of covering it just for people who don't know. If you're producing a lot of gas following eating and, within the hours that passing, you're not digesting the food properly. And one way to increase the digestion, if no matter how badly you're mixing your foods, if you took digestive enzymes, which are available in any health food store, there's a bunch of different names. There's one group that works very well, I find, is dried papaya. Green papaya, when it's when it's ground up and it's freeze-dried, produces, is loaded with enzymes, digestive enzymes that work very well. And go to any health food store and ask for green papaya powder. I don't get the capsules. You're paying for, I'd rather get just the powder. You're getting more enzymes for your money. That's one. They have something called betaine HCl, which produces it comes from about pineapples, I believe. But produces a enzyme that's very close to hydrochloric acid, which is the acid which your stomach normally produces. You can get something called pancreatin. This is also an enzyme that you can take. If you take it before the meal, you're going to digest the food a lot easier than if you take it after the meal, but it's still better to take it after the meal than not to take it all, but it works like gangbusters if you take it 10 or 15 minutes before you eat. And then it's already in your stomach and it can start helping you digest the food. And you're going to start realizing, particularly if you're a chronic burper or wind passer after you eat, and there's a lot of you out there who are hearing this, who you know it's you, you're going to be so pleasantly surprised that when you take digestive enzymes, there's more than the three I mentioned, but those are good as any to get. You're not going to be burping a lot. You're not going to be passing wind, and your spouse is going to be very pleased with you. So look into it. It's so simple to do. And there's basically four different types of blood types, A, A, B, O, and all that. There is a book written by a man named Peter, I'm trying to remember the last name, Adamo, maybe it's Peter Adamo. He wrote it in the mid-90s, 94, 95, 96, somewhere around there. It's called the title of the book is Eat Right for Your Blood Type, I think. I think that's the title. Eat Right, the number four, Your Blood Type. I think that's the correct title. Peter D'Adamo, I'm pretty sure that's the author. It's a great book. And he explains to you about the type of foods that are most adapted to each of the four blood groups. And if you limit your diet to the foods that are most appropriate for your blood group, I'm not going to say what blood type I am, but anyway, if you go for the foods that work most for your blood type, you're going to have a much easier time of it when it comes to digestion and when it comes to, sleeping well at night and feeling better. When your food digests well, your whole body, functions much better. And as a result of that, all your energy systems go up.
Oh, sure. You're going to have more energy and you're going to not be processing more toxicity in your body. So the aches and the pains are going to go away.
Exactly. So we can leave it go at that. I know I haven't actually gotten into the therapies, but I'm glad I was able to take the time to once again urge people, look into natural medicine. And I have no connection with the Huldah Clark people, the publisher. I don't sell her books. I have them listed on my website. You can contact her publisher through the listing of her books on my website. You can also get her books on Amazon. You can get her books in most major bookstores. There's plenty of ways to get her books. And the only reason I talk about her books in promo, I'm sure their publisher must be happy I'm doing this, but I do it because of the value of the information in the book.
Yeah.
Now, this woman, in my opinion, did spectacular work, and I'm definitely a big fan of her, not only the quality of her research, but the nature of her, of who she was. She wanted to help humanity, and she, you know, she really did a spectacular job in trying to help teach the world how to take care of yourself.
Yeah. Now, we're about out of time here.
Right.
We did have a call that came through. I got a text message. Rodney in South Carolina is trying to get some information on ChemBusters.
Yes, I'm going to email him on that. Tell him. Okay. I mean, I have to send him some information. He's waiting for information for him. I just didn't have a chance to do it the other day, but I'll get to you probably tonight, even Rodney.
Okay. Yeah, Ken's been going through similar problems to mine.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, we're out of time, but I want to thank you for being on the show. I don't have my schedule open. I have a habit of not opening it up for the month. But you're on again on the 21st, next Thursday.
Okay, great.
So, and we really threw Drew Raines off his schedule because he had Thursdays locked up. And I sort of mixed this schedule up a little bit to accommodate a couple of other guests.
Yes.
So I want to thank you for being on the show. Look forward to your next interview. And, Rodney, if you're out there listening, Ken will give you that information on ChemBusters.
Right. Thank you, Dan.
Okay. Folks, you have been listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com, and tonight's special guest, Mr. Ken Adachi. You can visit his website at educate-yourself.org, and you can spend a lot of time there. So be prepared. It's an internet library is what it is. Also, we'd like to thank Windtalkers Radio Network and Blog Talk Radio for carrying the show. Special thanks to Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible on bbsradio.com, Seth Hendrick on the sound, and most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. Join us again tomorrow night when my special guest will be none other than, who's my special guest tomorrow?
Drew, probably.
No, Drew was on...
he was on last night, okay.
He was on Tuesday. Oh, Mr. Michael Anthony. How can I forget that? Just talked to Michael today. Michael Anthony will be on, and we're going to be discussing some of the same issues that we talked about tonight, only a slightly different slant. And to you out there in the listening audience, I wish you a night filled with peace, love, and light. Everyone, have a good night.